All right, well, let me invite you this morning. We are going to head to the Tanakh, aka the Old Testament, more specifically to the Torah, what are the first five books of our Bibles, more specifically to Sefer Vayikra, what is Leviticus. We are continuing our journey through the Jesus backstory, right? In the same way that each one of us has a backstory, right? Each one of us has a history of experience. Right, all the joy and the sorrow, the struggle and the challenge, all of it giving form and shape and texture to who we are today. In the same way, Jesus, he too has a backstory. Backstory that is the Torah, Jesus being the fulfillment of the whole of the Torah with all of its joy and sorrow and all of its struggle and challenge, all of it giving form and shape and texture to the life and teachings of Jesus. And so today we continue working our way through. We're taking it parsha by parsha, section by section. The Torah being divided into 54 parshiot. And today we come to number 31, 31 of the 54. And what is parsha Emor? Parsha Emor gathers up Leviticus 21 through chapter 24, the end of chapter 24. If you're grabbing a pew Bible, page 86, the words will be on the screen behind me, against the backdrop of this lovely wall. Picking it up here at 21 and 1 this morning, Vayomer Adonai El Moshe, which, if you have been here, hopefully sounds a little bit different than the usual Vayedaber. Vayedaber begins just about every parshiot that we have read, noting that both are translated as to speak or to say. And yet it's interesting that we here don't get that usual Daber, but instead we get Yomer, and not only that, but in fact three times Yomer is read here, or at least the root, which is Amar. And so the whole point here, again, is that there is no Daber, not at least not here at the outset, which I'm sure all of you then are wondering, well, why is that? Why is there no Daber here in the beginning? Which, of course, leads to volumes and volumes of commentary. And from the Midrash, it says, which is the Jewish compilation of rabbinic interpretation, it says the difference is found in the tone. It's this idea that Amar is softer. It's more gentle. And with that, then it carries this idea of closeness and of intimacy. As rabbinic scholarship puts it, you choose to bear if you only need to tell people what to do, but Amar, if the task is so complex that it requires a partnership and people working together. And so perhaps interesting, this parsha, not only does it begin, Vayomer Adonai El Moshe, said Yahweh to Moses, it continues with Amor, again, think Amar. And so again, there's this idea of, for a second time, closeness and intimacy. Amor El Ha Kohanim B'nei Aharon, say to the priests, the sons of Aaron. And then again, Ve Amarta, Amar, say, and say Alehem to them. And so three times here, in just this opening verse, right, three times, we get, again, this sense of closeness and intimacy. It's conveying this idea of partnering with and working together. Now, to be clear, later on and throughout, there we do find Daber. But the point, again, is that the overarching kind of spirit, the prevalent witness, it is soft and it is gentle, it is close and it is intimate, it is a partnering with, and it is a working together. By way of synopsis, it begins with the ritual purities for the Kohanim, for the priests, and then it moves to instructions regarding the festivals, the Jewish festivals. By the way, Rosh Hashanah is happening now, New Year, there's the 10 days of awe, and then again, Yom Kippur is coming up in a week. And so it's all about instructions of Jewish festivals, and then it talks about the lighting of the menorah and the showbread, and then this is where it gets a bit interesting. It wraps up with these penalties for causing harm to another. And so from 24 and 17, it says, anyone who takes the life of a human being is to be put to death. Anyone who takes the life of someone's animal must make restitution, life for life. Anyone who injures their neighbor is to be injured in the same manner. And then these words that may be familiar, fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. The one who has inflicted the injury must suffer the same injury. All of which sounds very much not like closeness and intimacy, right? All of which sounds very much not like partnering with and working together. All of which sounds nothing like soft and gentle, which again now is why Jesus grabs hold of this. And he brings it into your life and mine. And so let's go to the Gospel of Matthew now, Matthew chapter 5, Pew Bible 684. Here it's Matthew 5 and verse 38. Last week, if you remember, it was Matthew 5 and 43. The week before, it was Matthew 5 and 21. And I would suggest to you, it's almost like there is really something to this whole Jesus and Parsha and backstory thing that we have going on. And here today, so Jesus, he takes us back to the Tanakh, right? He takes us back to the Torah, back to Vayikra, back to Amor, Parsha Amor, back to this idea, again, of soft and gentle, back to this idea of close and intimate, back to this idea of partnering with and all of us working together. And he says to his disciples, to his followers, including you and me, and he says, you have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth, which again, all sounds very painful from the scholar William Barclay. He says, in the very earliest days, the vendetta and the blood feud were characteristic of tribal society. If a man of one tribe injured a man of another tribe, then at once all the members of the tribe of the injured man were out to take vengeance on all the members of the tribe of the man who committed the injury. And the vengeance desired was nothing less than death. And so here is Jesus. He is again taking us back. He's referring to this idea, right, to Parsha Amor, back to eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Then he says, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. Now there's a couple of things here. I'll begin with the last first, noting that the phrase an evil person is from the Greek poneros, related to ponos, which is pain, it's suffering, it's distress, it's the ache. And so poneros is the idea of one who is doing harm to another, one who is creating pain for another, one who is causing injury to another. With that, the word resist, antistemi, it's this idea of to stand up under, to bear up under, to withstand. Even more than that, it is this idea of actively opposing in return. In fact, many scholars would translate antistemi as to use violence against. And Jesus steps into that here and he says, no, don't do that, right? Don't do harm. Don't create pain. Don't cause injury. In Romans 12 and 17, Paul follows up this idea. He says, do not repay anyone evil for evil, right? In other words, we could say here, do not repay harm for harm. Do not create pain for pain. Do not cause injury for injury. The Apostle Peter, 1 Peter 3 and 9, he uses the exact same language. He says, do not repay evil. And here again, we can think suffering, distress, pain, ache. Do not repay evil with evil, with suffering, pain, distress, and ache. Insult with insult. And then he says, on the contrary, repay evil with blessing. Meaning really to hold a positive disposition toward doing something good for another. From the scholar Michael Wilkins, he says, on a personal level, the disciples' first responsibility is to reverse the dynamic of the situation from taking to giving. The evil person is attempted to take, but Jesus' disciples are to give to the offender by blessing him or her. And again, we can think Parsha Amor, right? That overarching spirit, that prevalent kind of witness. Right, it's closeness and intimacy. It's partnering with, it's working together, which is really why then Jesus goes on and he gives us four vignettes, four little stories, what Tim Keller calls little sketches. And again, we can think here of the one that wants to do harm, the one that's creating pain, the one that is causing injury. And so Jesus offers this first sketch and he says, if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. Noting a slap was a serious insult. Back in that day, I think it still is. A slap is a serious insult. It's this implication that the one who is being slapped is less than. It's a devaluing of. It's a saying, you don't matter. Not to mention that a slap in this case, assuming the slapper is right-handed, to slap on the right cheek, you would either have to contort yourself or it would be with the back of the hand. And it's with the back of the hand that I think is exactly the point that Jesus wants to make, noting that within rabbinic law, a slap with the back of the hand was twice as insulting as with the palm or the front of the hand. If he slapped another on the cheek, reads the Talmud, he must give him 200 dinars. If he slapped him on the cheek with the back of his hand, which is more degrading than a slap with the palm, he must give him 400 dinars. We can add to that that the turning of the cheek, it has this sense of being a visible offering of blessing. Not to mention that verb to turn in the Septuagint, which is that Greek translation of the Hebrew, that idea of to turn refers to turning a curse into a blessing. In fact, in Luke's gospel, we read from 6 and 28, Jesus is speaking here. He says, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you. In effect, turn the other cheek. Turn the other cheek to the one who is doing you harm. Turn the other cheek to the one who is creating you pain. Turn the other cheek to the one who is causing you injury. He then goes on, he says, and if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. Of course, it wasn't a shirt and a coat back in that day. It was a tunic and a cloak. A tunic was that inner garment. Even the poor would have several of them. The cloak was that outerwear that was worn as a robe during the day. It was a blanket at night. And the poor would have only one. And yet here Jesus, in effect, says, bless, right? Giving even that one thing. Giving the last of what you have. If anyone forces you, he goes on, to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles, which is, we can picture a military scene here. And again, a military personnel, they could show up and they could demand help from local citizens in official business. And so it's a picture here of a Roman soldier, who, by the way, is the oppressor. The Roman soldier is the one who is doing harm, is creating pain, causing you injury, and he shows up on your doorstep, he drops his bags, and he says, carry these for me, what would have been the Roman limit of 1,000 paces, which would be approximately about a mile, and it's into that Jesus says, not 1 mile, he says, but go 2 miles. Right, in effect, bless the one who is taking from you, who is demanding from you. And then verse 42, give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. The word ask, aiteo, it has the sense of urgency to it, is one who is begging for help. Borrow comes from donezo. Again, it's this idea, it's kind of this idea of desperation, someone who is desperate, desperately in need, someone who also would not have the ability to repay you. And so that could be translated, 42, we could translate, bless the one who is desperate and in need and without any ability to give to you in return. Now, with all of that said, I really appreciate the perspective of the scholar R.T. France here. He writes, here more than anywhere, we need to remind ourselves that Jesus' aim is not to establish a new and more demanding set of rules. It is, he continues, to establish a different understanding of how we should live as the people of God. From N.T. Wright, he shares this view. He says, this isn't just about how to behave. It's about discovering the living God and the loving and dying Jesus, and learning to reflect that love ourselves into a world that needs it so badly. Right, a love, and we can think back to last week. We talked about love, and we talked about agape. Right, that love that sacrifices for another, that love that seeks nothing but the other's highest good. Right, we're called to reflect that love to a world that needs it so badly, both right here in this room, yes, and outside of these walls, to reflect that love, to reflect, we could say in light of Parsha and Mor, to reflect that overarching kind of spirit, that prevalent witness. Right? It's close and it's intimate. It's partnering with, it's working together. Right? And it's that is then flowing in and all through the harm and the pain, the injury. It's that love then that flows in and through the ache, the suffering, the distress, which invites us then, are we, you and me, are you and I, are we reflecting that love of God? Is my life a reflection of God's love? Right? Again, a love that sacrifices. Right? A love that, I think, benevolence and goodwill, a love that seeks nothing but the highest good of the other, a love that turns the other cheek, that offers the coat, that goes the extra mile. A love that gives to the one in need. And so are we reflecting that love of God? Are we a reflection of that love of God? And then we could ask, who needs me? Who needs me today, this week, to be a reflection of God's love? Who is it that needs me? And then with that, what would it look like? What would it look like for me to reflect God's love to that one? And then to kind of wrap up, we can think about the little sketches that Jesus gave. There's four of them, kind of individual, but yet compiled together. It's all about blessing. They're all about blessing another. Blessing even that one who wants to do me wrong. And so we could ask, to whom will I offer a blessing today? To whom will I offer a blessing? What would it look like to bless another this week? Right? What would it look like? How will I? What would it look like to reflect the love of God? And to whom will I offer a blessing? Vayomer Adonai el Moshe Emor, said Yahweh to Moses, say,